Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, this experience was so great to be able to respond to some conversations that you've started with me, both introspective about my own business and what I can think differently and how I can approach the business differently, but also to now respond to some new shocks that none of us have ever seen. I mean, we're combining three different years, 1918, 1968, and 2008, all this year, but to talk through it with your listeners and to talk through it through your framework has been extremely helpful. So thank you for being my mentor, and thank you for helping me think through these issues along with your clients.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. And multi-venture entrepreneur Skip Thaler, he is our today's guest mentor. He loves the challenge of starting and growing successful new businesses. He's hardworking, generous, and competitive. Prospecting and capitalizing on opportunities in the marketplace to create new businesses has been the lifeblood of his success, and he's why I asked him to be today's guest. There's a window of opportunity that each of us have when we start our ventures and also, you know, in order to be successful in growing them. It's a very hard concept to teach. So the best way to do it is through real life experiences that entrepreneurs have in how they shape and mold the opportunities that they create a successful life out of. And Skip Thaler is very unique in his ability to see the opportunity and build extremely successful ventures. He's been doing it since the 60s. So we're going to break down in three separate conversations how those opportunities kind of came about. And so first, I'd like to start with acknowledging and thanking today's sponsor, Sally Doyle. She wants you to take action before the year's end. Great Lakes Bookkeeping not only provides relief from the tedious bookkeeping tasks, but also uses the information as a roadmap to advise owners of opportunities that can help their business. With over 20 years of experience and expertise, owners trust Sally to help them achieve their goals and dreams. Right now, you can reach her to get a profit analysis and cash flow projections and end-of-year advice. We need a lot of that. Call Sally to get it done. The end of 2020 is finally upon us, and a new administration we're going to be shoring up and shoring in and welcoming in. So call Sally, Great Lakes Bookkeeping, 1-651-208-8151. You can also reach her at greatlakesbookkeeping.com. All right, back to today's guest. So Skip Thaler was raised in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, as the eldest of four children. His father was influential in his successful entrepreneurial journey that began in the 60s. He married his childhood sweetheart, Jill Kroll, and was blessed to have three adult children, George, Sarah, and Tim. They now have seven grandchildren. So I just wanted to say that Skip's undergraduate degree was earned from the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, in business and economics, and his master's degree is in international business from Bowling Green State University in Ohio. So welcome to the program, Skip. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Nancy. Thank you for the introduction, and thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. First of all, I'd like to also recognize and thank my family, especially my wife, who has tolerated and endured with me over all these years.
Jill is amazing.
Living with a workaholic and three children that are now grown and raising their own families have been were extremely supportive and understanding of what I went through as a entrepreneur. Obviously, takes up a lot of time, and when you take up time from work, you take it away from the family. So that was very important for me to get their support at that time. Anyway, I thought I'd pick up maybe where once I got out of graduate school in Bowling Green, Ohio, which is about 30 miles south of Toledo and about 90 miles south of Detroit, I took a job with IBM in sales in the data processing area. And you go back and you look at that. And the reason I say this is because this kind of laid the groundwork for me getting into different businesses, because I knew nothing about computers and I knew nothing about sales. And I had a cursory knowledge of what business was about, learning it, you know, from a college, grad school perspective. But really, it did not prepare me for the first part of my education with IBM, because they put me into what they call a computer systems training class. And I did not have any previous computer background. And they believed that you needed to understand the computer and how it worked and how it functioned prior to being able to go out and market it or sell it. There's many times I came back to the hotel room and coming back from school and literally had tears in my eyes because I was having difficulty with it, but I persevered. And one thing I learned was that I could relate to people, and the people skills is what really brought me forward and taught me the lessons I've learned over the years. Even though I had difficulty in getting through the computer school, first year I was nominated Rookie Salesman of the Year in the Western regions. There were two regions, Eastern and Western. In other words, I had been able to sell my quota and then some. And in terms of first year people, I had excelled in the Western region. The second year, I was New Account Salesman of the Year in the entire company. And that probably gave me more self-confidence than anything else when I look back on it.
Yeah, and you noticed a skill that you had right away.
Yeah, and, you know, it probably wasn't conscious, but subconsciously it just gives you confidence. And, you know, in anything you do, especially in sales, you have to be confident in what you're doing. So and then with that, in a corporation, you do well and they offer you another job. So they came to me with an opportunity to move to New York City from Minneapolis. And in a staff position, because they would go line staff in their training. And I thought about it, and I came very close to taking the job and finally turned it down. So 3 months later, they come to me with an airline ticket, and they says, well, you won't come to New York. We'll let you take the skills you've learned with us, and you can travel around the country and teach other people what you've learned. And I spent about a year and a half on that, and the writing was on the wall. I was going to have to move, and I didn't want to leave the Midwest.
What was IBM known for, the acronym at that time?
IBM stood for I've Been Moved. I mean, it was not unusual, say, in 10 years for people to move three or four times, and that wasn't in my DNA, so I decided that I needed to start to look around, and I did. I looked at other businesses like dry cleaning. I looked at vending machine businesses. I looked at glass repair of auto windows, and you know, you name it. They all required a key to get in the door, and you had to sit in the business typically to run it, and that wasn't where my skills were. Mine were taking it to the people and you know, initiating the sale process. Well, then I'm going to guess maybe 3 months before I left IBM, my father, who was an entrepreneur and really had a lot of influence on me, because one of my plans was, and I don't know if I mentioned, but was to get into the family business. And
what was the family business?
They were in the petroleum convenience. Well, really back then it wasn't convenience store, but they were in the service station business, and they also sold tires, batteries, and accessories to these stations. So my dad had gotten an advertising brochure from a gentleman by the name of Dick Palmer, and he answered it. And he was given an opportunity, or he was given an opportunity to get into a buying group, which required like $1,000 to buy the territory, and you paid 2% of your sales. Well, he didn't have a need for that because he already had his business set up, but he asked me if I'd be interested. So I said, you know, I thought about it for a while, and I said, yeah, that might be something I can take a look at going for, you know, I know how to sell computers. Computers is a lot like tires, so I guess I'll go into it, you know.
How old were you at that time about?
Pardon?
How old were you at that time about?
I was, I think, 26.
Okay.
Yeah, 26 at the time. So I was still young enough, but yet old enough to understand what I was going to possibly get into. What I found out that I really didn't need to know a lot about tires, okay? I know at first I labored over the fact that, man, how am I going to learn all this stuff? And then really, after I got into it, I came to realize, just like in computers, I didn't know, you know, all the details, but I could talk conceptually about it and ask a lot of questions. And as a result of that, I was, you know, the sales came easy.
This was Fleetwood Franchise?
Yeah. What it was is it was a buying group. And a buying group, what they would do is Dick Palmer, who owned the Fleetwood name and had manufacturers manufacturing the tire under that name, would go to different people around the country and set up these master, what they called a master membership. And you would own that territory, and that territory would, anything that got sold in there, you were paid a commission by the manufacturer. So you didn't have to carry any receivables, you didn't have to carry any inventory, and you didn't need any people. Okay. I thought to myself, what an ideal business. I mean, you know, how many businesses can you get into today that don't require an investment in inventory or carrying receivables or hiring people?
Right.
And I hired people. I did hire people, but they were not W-2 people. They were people that were 1099, like the person that you did the commercial for. Okay.
Yeah.
That would be an ideal person for this kind of business. Okay.
Contractors. Yeah.
So all I needed was basically I needed a telephone line. I needed an automobile, a credit card for my gas, hotel, and meals, lots of ambition and competitive drive. And I needed a reserve so that I could feed the family for the next couple months until I turned the corner, and a marketing program. And that's what they offered me. So. That was kind of neat to be able to come across that at that stage in my life.
Yeah. What made this opportunity, it came at not an ideal time, but there was a window of opportunity where you couldn't move in the direction you wanted to with IBM. And so you needed this other opportunity. What was the length of time in which before you started, you know, cash flowing your business, and what was going on in your personal life at the time that you bought into Fleetwood Franchise?
Good question. It's funny is because I was reflecting back on this because this goes back a long time. It's over, say, 50 years.
Yeah, this is in the 70s.
Yeah. And what I did was, I was on a commission with IBM, but I did have a small draw at the time. And so, you know, that was, you had some comfort in that. But I ended up leaving that job, which was very good paying. Jill, my wife, had been working in an administrative job at Alcoa Aluminum. she left her job a week before we had a baby and the oil embargo was on. And, you know, there's never a perfect time to start something like this. But I figured, what the heck, go ahead and try it. And the worst thing that happens, it fails. And I can go get a job and Joe could go get a job. Well, fortunately, that never happened. So,
wow. So when did it start paying off?
Immediately. Immediately, meaning within 3 months. Sold 4 new accounts. The first month I had the business going, because I had been doing some work prior to, and ended up closing 4 accounts. I think that first month, they bought product, bought tires, and we shipped the tires. They got billed the following month, and then we got paid, or I got paid my commission the third month. So I went through probably about $3,000 of my $10,000 in savings at the time, but it was immediate. So, you know, there was not a negative cash flow, which I was very fortunate to have. And it's interesting because I remember going down and seeing one of my fellow salesmen at IBM, which is in Chicago, and because I had Wisconsin, Minnesota as a territory. And I just dipped down to see him about, I think it was sometime in December or January. But I told him, I said, I made as much money in the month of December selling tires as I did in the previous year selling computers for IBM. So wow. I knew I had kind of arrived in that ninth month when, you know, I'd really turned the corner and it became financially very evident that
that you were onto something.
I was onto something. Yep. At the time, I didn't even know it. So
what were the things that kind of came together that led you to build a $12 to $13 million wholesale company within 7 years? I was kind of noticing when I was reflecting on your background, every 7 years, there's like a big transition in your life.
Well, you know something I didn't know. I don't know what the next 7 has, but I hope it's rest and relaxation. Anyway, the question is how did I go about carving out that business? Well, It's pretty basic. The Fleetwood opportunity had a very simple program. One thing that I didn't understand at the time when I got in was that manufacturers like Goodyear and Firestone, Bridgestone, and so on, when they go in and they sold their product to their dealers, they laid out a price sheet and then they laid out discounts. You know, this week there was a 10, 10, and 20, and a 30. And next week it was a 35 and a 10 and a 2. So at the time, computers, you know, people didn't have computers to keep track of things. They never knew what their cost of inventory was. It was all a manual operation. Fleetwood sold each tire at a predetermined price and had a price sheet to sell from, so people always knew what their profit was. So simplicity, I guess you could say, was one of the things. Uh-huh. Another one was maintaining a competitive pricing. They didn't have things marked up and require you to buy, say, 1,000 tires to be able to get the best price, because what happened then is that favored the big guy and, you know, the little guy still had to compete with them. So we would go in and sell everybody at the same price. So everybody was on equal footing. So that was a, something that, made it a lot easier for me. And then having a system, I developed a system of telephone calling. We'd send out a flyer to all the dealers in a particular area. They'd fill out an inquiry card, send it back. We'd call them back on the phone, or I'd call them back on the phone and qualify them to, first of all, determine whether they were really interested or not. Then I'd send out 3 pieces of literature. And after I sent that to them, I would go through a presentation on the phone with them. It's probably about 20 minutes to a half an hour. And, you know, first of all, you had to get their attention. So what I would do is I'd ask them if they, had received the literature I sent out to them, and they'd yes or no. And if yes, then I would go through with them and I would check. I'd say, by the way, what is the date that you have on the top of that price sheet? and I would be checking with them to make sure they were following me. And I'd get done with the presentation, and I'd say, do you think you can qualify? And, well, what do I need to do to qualify? And I just ask them, well, who do you bank with? Okay, and I'd get references. I'd have them ask them if they had a pencil and a piece of paper, have them write down a name, which would be the credit department of the manufacturer we're doing business with. I'd tell them, or I'd ask them to send in a financial statement. And usually you had to follow up a couple times to make sure they did that. But it was that process was very systematic. And then what we do is, once I got them qualified, in other words, the manufacturer gave them a line of credit, I'd go out and I'd get an order. And I just kept doing that. And it was, you know, it was not difficult. It was a very systematic way of going about your business.
It sounds too like it provided you the opportunity to build a relationship with people.
Yeah, I mean, eventually that's what it's all about. I think in any aspect of businesses is the relationships you have. But we took it a step further, because what we did is we had a for lack of a better name, a catalog. I'll call it a flyer catalog. And we would direct mail to their customers, potential customers, the Fleetwood product. And it would have, you know, very competitive pricing. It'd have their name on it and so on. And then, so each quarter, we'd send that out. And they, you know, if they're going to sell the tires, they better have them in inventory. And so that kind of fulfilled two objectives. That was, is number one is help them sell the tires, but also they were forced, not forced, but they were, it was a good idea for them to have inventory. And then the last thing, which it's hard for people to understand this sometimes, but if you have an exclusive on a particular product, you don't have to worry about price competition nearly as much. And we offered that. We'd give them a territory. And then we'd give them a quota associated with it. As long as they were meeting their quota, we wouldn't sell to anybody else. So the simplicity, the competitive part of it, the system and the marketing and the exclusiveness were really what set it apart. So,
oh, excellent. And what were some of the 3 to 5 most prominent lessons that you learned about shaping? So a franchise, the business infrastructure is already organized. So
correct.
It was a simple program. You kind of built up the system based on what you've learned. So what were the things that you were able to kind of take and shape with Fleetwood Franchise?
Well, first of all, I learned to think outside the box. Basically, I'll give you an idea. Is anytime you ship something back then, there was two ways to ship it. Less than trailer load and trailer load. And they had two different freight rates. The freight rate for a trailer load was they would prepay it, so there would be no extra cost. On the less than trailer load, without getting into details, it cost money. But they would allow a credit for the trailer load rate. You just have to pay the difference. So what I did is I figured out, or not figured out, but I put together a group of people that, you know, geographically they would, you know, I'd start down in Janesville, Wisconsin, go up to Madison, go up to Stevens Point, and I would fill a truck up with each of the customers. You know, one may need 100, another need 200, another need 400. And I would get a group of them together so that I could basically ship the tires to them at the prepaid rate with buying at a less than a trailer load rate. And this allowed them to be buying their product for less money. So I learned that, you know, think outside the box. Don't do things that, you know, just go ahead and ship 100 tires and let them pay the difference. And that gave me a competitive advantage, or gave them a competitive advantage too.
This is also one of the skill sets too, is I see with successful entrepreneurs is they apply critical thinking, you know, and you're thinking from the customer's perspective.
Right.
You know, how can I save them money?
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you save them money, and you make it more profitable, you're going to become more valuable to them. But that was, you know, that was just something that I had, came up. I don't know how it got developed, but it really did make a difference in the business, because it could be a couple, you know, it could be 5 or 10% to the cost of the product. Other thing I learned is that for every problem, there is an opportunity. And that's that is a good example of one. The problem was having to pay for freight and then figuring a way not to have them to pay for freight. And it also gave me an opportunity to call them on a regular basis to check in to see if they needed anything. So, and the other thing I learned was that no matter what you're selling, computers or tires, it doesn't make any difference as long as you have the skill set to take care of a need and fulfill it. I had two other businesses going at the same time. I also got involved in a manufacturer's rep business in equipment. And I don't know, it's auto equipment, like front end alignment equipment, lifts to lift the car or truck off the ground to work on it.
I see.
And what I learned was, the other thing I learned from that is that, you know, I'm calling on this person that's buying tires. Well, why not sell them equipment too at the same time? You know, it's just basically learning another product, and I could become the rep for that product, and it didn't cost me a nickel. So anything that was made as a result of that was just extra money. So I learned how to leverage myself also, which made a big difference. So
leveraging yourself in the relationships that you've developed to maximize them the best you could. Sounds
yep.
like, yeah. Okay.
And the other thing, Nancy, I learned was I stayed in that business for the equipment business for about 3 or 4 years. And I asked myself, well, why did I get out of it? Well, I went back to a basic premise, and that is you sell things that are low in cost and repeat in sale. And the money is made in the repeat sales. It's not made, you know, on the initial order. It's where you're building up that relationship and people are buying from you on a regular basis. And equipment did not lend itself to that. And I didn't even know which end of the screwdriver to hold. I mean, that's about how mechanical I am. Okay. I was then and I am now. And it worked out fine. I had a fellow that worked for me on a straight commission basis. So really wasn't an employee, and I turned it over to him at the end of, I think it was 4 years. So.
And then something changed with the Fleetwood franchise that led you, kind of moved you closer to your next venture.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
Well, in 1981, I think it was, 81 or 83, I can't remember for sure. I should remember those dates, but they took bankruptcy for a lot of different reasons that they weren't minding the store, so to speak. I'm not sure what it was, but the individual that I was my mentor at Fleetwood, Dick Palmer, who started the business, was an incredible asset to me. So I never really carried any resentment because I was the second largest unsecured creditor in that bankruptcy. And I just wrote it off as a part of education, because I learned a lot more in the tire business, and I learned a lot more from IBM than I did in any, 6 years in college and graduate school.
Hmm. Yeah. Excellent. Well, I have a last question as we kind of gear up for a second conversation to talk about how Tires Plus became a client of yours. So you initially supplied tires to them, Firestone and Bridgestone, right?
No, I supplied Fleetwood to them, actually.
Okay.
That was originally, I did sign a personal guarantee for them once so they could buy Bridgestone tires. Okay. I don't know why I did that, but because they were a competitor at the time. But anyway.
Okay. So how did the relationship with Tom Gigax and Don Gullett start?
I didn't know Don at the time for quite a bit of this time prior to getting involved with them. Tom and I were neighbors. And when the two of them started Tires Plus, it actually wasn't called Tires Plus. It was called, I can't remember the name of it, but they had bought three service stations from Shell Oil. And Tires Plus, really, the name came later.
Oh.
But they were, you know, they had some capital. They needed help. They needed to get a supplier and, you know, for the product, and they needed help at the banks. I did sign a personal guarantee for them, for a couple of years, at the bank. And then I supplied them for quite a while. And, what happened, and when I say quite a while, is as they grew, they grew their business initially through wholesale, which is the business I was in. But they were what we would call maybe a second-tier wholesaler, and I was a first-tier. Well, as they grew, they became a first-tier wholesaler, and we started to compete with each other. And we were still, you know, it was good competition, but at the same time, we were competitors. And that went on until 1987. And in 1986, I guess, we started the process. Sam's Club was coming into the Twin Cities, and they, as many other retailers knew at the time, they were very, very competitive price-wise, and they were in tires. And it became very, very difficult to compete with them, especially at a retail level and even at a wholesale level. Now, that's changed since then, but we decided that the two of us, the two businesses put together, would be a lot stronger if we could, you know, basically combine forces, combine sales forces. They had at the time, I think they had 11 stores, okay? And they were doing about, I think about $12, $13 million, and that's about what we were doing. So together we combined and we became roughly a $25 million business. And at that time, that was probably today's terms, probably $75 to $100 million business. And so that, you know, it was a sizable operation.
Yeah. Well, let's stop right there.
Okay.
And we'll start our second conversation with kind of going into a few more details about Tires Plus, because in their published history in 1976, so they say that two Shell Oil colleagues launched Tires Plus with three former Shell service stations is what you were talking about, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
In Burnsville, Minnesota. In 2001, Tires Plus acquired BSRO. So today, Tires Plus has more than 5,000 teammates working in 400-plus stores in 23 states. And Tom Gigax and Phil Bolsta, they wrote what's called the Big Book of Small Business, so you don't have to run your business by the seat of your pants, in 2007. What did you think when that book came out, just as we finish up our conversation for today?
Sure. Well, I, you know, Tom is... he's very good at managing. He's very good at running a business, and he was able to take and put that information into a book that was basically a how-to type of author, whatever. And I think he did a great job.
Excellent. Was there anything that you would add into the book if you were adding another chapter?
My next career after Tires Plus is completely different. So I would, for me, what I ended up doing worked out great for me. What Tom and Don and the rest of Larry and the rest of them did was excellent for them. So there's no right or wrong way to do things. They They built an organization, were very successful in the retail and in selling it, and I just decided on a completely different path.
So the chapter of the book, an extended chapter, would be there's more than one avenue to create.
There's more ways than one. Yeah, there's more than one ways to skin a cat. Okay,
that's right.
What happened with me is when I got involved in this business, I remember. I mean, I had a business. I had developed after Fleetwood had been bankrupt, I developed a brokerage business where we were buying and selling discontinued and blemished tires. And in that process, I had to start to hire people, and I had to buy a computer. I had to create an administrative staff, and I had like 20 people. Okay.
So
running that operation between the sales and the administrative and accounting help. Okay.
So let's pull those pieces together in our next conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good. Okay. Excellent. Because, as you're probably noticing as a listener, that the one opportunity kind of presents itself in a different way down the road once you're doing the opportunity. Well, it shows that businesses are always changing and growing and shifting. And Skip, you're really able to kind of see what's going on and shift as the industry kind of shifts and move into other areas where there's a window of opportunity that presents itself in front of you and you're able to capitalize on it in a really effective way. Well, thank you for being our guest mentor for today. And
one last thing, if I can just add.
Yes, please do.
Okay. One of the reasons that I decided to do what I did was I laid awake at night based on what I call the 5-5-2 theory. We, in retail, you spend 5 months of the year losing money, the first 5 months, okay? Mm-hmm. You in the tire business, you went in the hole. The next 5 months, you made money so that you got back to zero. And if you had snow in November, we called it white gold. In November and December, you made money. So it really grated on me that I spent 10 months of the year doing all this business and not making any money. So that played a big part in my decision making. So,
okay. And what was the two for?
The last 2 months was you could hopefully make money.
Oh, I see. So that's where.
So you're 5 months of losing money, 5 months to get the money back you lost. So mm-hmm. you're at zero. In the last 2 months, you made money.
I see.
So you worked 10 months for nothing. In 2 months, you hopefully made profits. Okay.
And after you do that for a while, you're like, okay, now that I've analyzed that and know what it is, I'm...
That was my viewpoint, okay?
Yeah, I'm ready to move on to the next opportunity.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thanks everybody for tuning in. Thanks Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Mon Frere, brother from another mother. And we'll see you all next in our next conversation. Thanks. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to reinvent yourself or evolve as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. Are you ready to take charge of who you next become? If the answer is yes, I've been developing and implementing mentoring programs to thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and business owners and their teams since 1992. I totally love it and feel I'm on this planet to involve the leadership in the world from the inside out. Of course, this means seeing myself as a work in progress, which is beneficial to you because I'm not stagnant and I'm motivated to create and bring you incredible programming all the time. So here's a few ways that you can get involved in our WeMentor self-leadership community. You can subscribe for free through WeMentor.com to the podcast. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts, which used to be iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, Blueberry Directory, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio, which is where you can shout out your request on smart home device through Alexa, Cortana, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. You can also become a sponsor of this program and support what's happening here in these all these meaningful conversations. Or you can get one-on-one mentoring and go at your own pace as you evolve into the leader that you've always wanted to become. You can join a We Mentor Mini Lab, which we offer several times during the year. We're focused on some element of self-leadership and your progress toward becoming more effective. And the last and final way in which you can get involved in We Mentor's self-leadership community is by joining a one-year entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab where we dig into the details and help you with the operational along with your leadership skills so you can evolve with your entity and really, really progress in building the life that you've always wanted to build. So please check out wementor.com. You can email me, nancy@wementor.com, or call me, 1-612-804-8920. All right, keep listening, and we'll see you next week.